As Ernest, don't do anything but what we planned, okay? Burn the fucking van and get the fuck back to safety. Walter nodded again. Don't worry, he said. Everything's gonna work out. Chapter 30. Walter drove with paranoia. Every corner he passed hit a convoy of Fed gun trucks. His eyes played tricks on him and he kept seeing black objects in the air in his mirrors, but when he checked them again, there was nothing. This feeling in his chest, in his stomach, in his head, thready and featherweight and heavy as lead all at once. It pounded like timpani drums and it buzzed like bullets whizzing by. It was the feeling of so close. It was the feeling of don't fuck it up now. It was a morbid bastardization of the feeling you get when you're telling a joke to a crowd and hoping to God that you don't screw up the punchline. Except for there was no humor in this. In Walter's version, there wasn't a crowd. There was a government. And if he didn't pull it off, he was going to pay for it with his life. He gripped the wheel in both hands as he drove the van through a convolution of twists and turns, a special route that led out of the city of Durham and was kept clear of spying eyes from traffic cameras and drones. It was their smuggling path. It was how they got things in and out of the city. Gradually, the cityscape of run-down and bombed-out business and apartments began to disappear, and there was dirt and trees, plunging into that no-man's land between city and agrarian district. Walter didn't feel any better when he exited the city proper. He felt more exposed. At least in the city, he knew that they'd controlled the route he'd taken. Out here in no man's land, they didn't have that same control. A drone could be following him right now. And maybe this one had ordnance strapped to it. Maybe in a few seconds, a mini-bomb was going to hit that van, and Walter was going to cease to exist in the blink of an eye. And it wasn't the concept of his own death that troubled him so much, but rather the failure that he'd leave behind. Much left undone. Much left vulnerable. He needed to do this. He needed to fix this. He needed to make him and Carolyn free again, and they were close. They were so close to it. In this mishmash of guilt and paranoia, Walter almost passed by his turnoff. He caught it at the last second, and he slowed the van down. It was a gravel turnoff. It went over a cracked concrete culvert, and then it was just dirt that led back into a forest of evenly spaced and uncrowded pine trees, the pathway paved with a carpet of red-brown needles. He made the right-hand turn and checked his mirrors again, but there was no one else on the road. He drove down the dirt path, his heart rapping on the back of his breastbone like a cop knocking on a door, and his thoughts taking him to an unpleasant place where at the next bend in the dirt road, gun trucks would be waiting, a team of Fed new breeds pointing battle rifles at him. But when he made the last bend in the road, he saw what he expected to see and nothing more. He saw what he'd last seen when he'd been here the previous day. A tumble-down structure that hadn't been viable as a house in probably a century, and parked in the clearing with it, a small silver car. Walter stopped the van and put it in park. You're there, he thought to himself. Just get it done and get out. Carolyn was waiting for the cars when they pulled back into the loading dock of the Fresh Market. They checked their backs and the sky, and they weren't followed. She knew that Walter was not with them. He would be burning the van right about now. But she couldn't think of anything else to do with her nervous self, so she waited for the rest of the team. It was a GUV and a sedan. They stopped adjacent to each other, and the doors opened, and the team stepped out. Carmichael and Hughes wandered over to stand with Carolyn. The new breed named Clay went to the back of the sedan and retrieved the black backpack from there. Bobby took an identical one from the back of the GUV's cargo area. Getty hobbled along behind her and Clay. Carolyn took note of him, as well as of Harris, who had to be supported by Kaz.
How bad are the wounds? She asked. Does anyone need the doctor right now?
Kaz nodded and pointed to Harris, who he was holding upright, and then to Getty.
Yeah, both of these gents got holes in them. We could use a doc.
Carolyn looked over her shoulder at a few others of her command team.
Go tell Doc Sheila to get ready for two wounded incoming.
The one that she'd spoken to, a young, squirrely-looking man, hopped to and ran off. Bobby dropped the backpack on the ground in front of Carmichael. Clay put his there as well. Carmichael eyed the two bags. Everyone did an outstanding job. How much did you manage to get? Getty twisted his back up, showing some discomfort on his face. Should be about 25 mil. One corner of Carmichael's mouth twitched. Should have been so much more. Getty raised an eyebrow.
Well, time was a bit of a factor, he said with a snap to his tone. I apologize if we couldn't throw more money at Mr. Honeycutt. God knows the poor bastard deserves it, what with all the fighting he's done.
Carmichael's expression flattened out. No need for sarcasm, Mr. Getty.
Well, Getty sneered. We got what we could, okay?
Carolyn stepped up to the two of them.
It was never about the money anyways, she said. Then she looked to Kaz. You new breeds needed to be seen, and that's exactly what's happened.
Hughes smiled at the group. The wire is blowing up right now, he said. You should see the traffic I'm seeing out there right now. The Fed is having a fucking conniption, and the coax is in full panic mode. Cue the knee-jerk reactions. Carolyn gave Kaz a slight bow of her head.
You guys sold it, and I think it worked. I think they're going to try to move on Durham.
Kaz gave his wounded comrade a pat on the shoulder and bowed respectively back at Carolyn.
Well, it was you and Walt's brainchild. All I can say is that I'm looking forward to getting my boots into Coax County. I've been resentful of the place since I was born, and frankly, I'm looking forward to blowing it the fuck up.
Carolyn smiled.
Go get patched up, guys. We're going to have a lot of work coming down the pipe.
Goring waited patiently at the kitchen counter. He refilled his cup of coffee from what was left in the carafe on the kitchen counter. Pete the old man, the dead old man, had decent taste in coffee, and for that Goring thanked him posthumously. Goring had taken the liberty of making a batch while he waited for the techs to do their work. The woman named Macy sat at the kitchen counter. She spent a lot of her time with her head turned in the opposite direction as the body of Pete, who lay in the living room right there to her right. Macy apparently found lots of interesting stuff to stare at on the walls to her left. Goring sipped his coffee, scalding and black. Watched the woman for a moment. Would you like some coffee, Miss Stockwell? She didn't look at him. Gave a small shake of her head, and her throat and lips constricted, as though she struggled to contain vomit. Goring's nostrils flared.
Use your words.
She glanced at him now. Their eyes met for the barest of seconds, but she apparently didn't like what she saw there, either. She looked away, unthinking, to her right, and her eyes fell on Pete's body, and she cringed and turned her head back to the left, blinking rapidly.
No, thank you,
she whispered. That's better, Goring thought. He inspected her up and down. Plump little thing, but well distributed. Those shocking blue-gray eyes, that flushed face. Pretty, but in an accessible sort of way, which made it even better. The sort of woman Goring knew wouldn't take much effort to get to sleep with him. If the circumstances were different, he might try, and he was pretty sure he'd succeed. Agent Goring? A voice cut into his thoughts. Goring sniffed sharply, then looked over into the living room where a tech stood holding a palm computer that was connected by a strand of wires to the PD they'd appropriated from Pete's dead arm. Yes? Goring asked.
We've got the number.
Oh, good. Goring took one last sip of his coffee and set the cup down. He unholstered his pistol and gestured at Macy with it. Go into the living room, please. She hesitated, looking terrified, those piercing eyes locked on his. Goring nodded.
Now, Ms. Stockwell?
She rose from her seat at the kitchen table, and with her fingers tying knots around each other, she took tiny, hesitant steps into the living room like a stage-frightened child being pressed into the spotlight. When she was in the living room, standing at the dead man's feet, Goring brushed her cheek with the muzzle of his pistol, which caused her whole body to go rigid and gave him a bit of a stir in his pants.
Kneel down, he said.
She'd begun to cry, but she kept it silent. That was good. Goring hated the sound of women crying. When she knelt next to dead Pete, Goring held his free hand out to the tech and waved his fingers.
Dial the number and hand it to me, please.
Walter closed the trunk of the silver car. It was packed, secure. He was ready to go.
You're almost there. All you have to do now is get out clean.
He walked to the van and opened the front passenger side door. He leaned in and opened the glove box. Inside was a small package of thermal explosive that Harris had rigged up for him. All he had to do was place it on the front seat and flip the starter switch. Harris told him that the explosion wouldn't be too big, but it'd turn the car to slag. Walter felt less than comfortable with it, but it was one of those things where he just wanted to get it done and over with, so he pulled the thing out of the glove box and set it on the seat and looked at it for a few seconds, refamiliarizing himself with the components to make sure he didn't do anything wrong, didn't accidentally set it off early or disarm it somehow. The PD on his arm buzzed. He jolted, twitching his hands back from the thermal charge and feeling his heart skip a few beats, and then bang, 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 rushed to catch up with itself. He swore under his breath and looked at the PD. Who the hell was calling him right now? Was it Carolyn? Why didn't she just raise him on the comms? He still had the damn thing in his ear and the PTT hooked to his finger. He looked at the PD and saw the number. There was no name associated with it, but Walter recognized the number all the same. It was the same number that had called him out of the blue when he'd been approaching the safe house, and the gruff voice of Pete the old man told him to stop the car and raise his hand out the window. He frowned at his PD. Why was Pete calling him right now? In the span of just a second or two, dozens of unpleasant possibilities skittered through Walter's head. But he made the decision and flipped up his PD. There was a live feed request, but Walter kept it on voice only for now. "Hello?" Walt said. It wasn't Pete that answered. It was a man, and Walter didn't recognize his voice. He didn't recognize it, but he instantly hated it, and he didn't know why at first, and then only seconds later he knew exactly why, and Walter felt his stomach start to shake, rattle, and roll inside of him. "Walter," the voice said, supremely calm and confident, "I'm holding a gun to Macy Stockwell's head right now. If you terminate this call, I'm going to kill her. Do you understand?" Walter stood there, realized his core was tight, aching. He wanted badly to key the comms and say something to Carolyn, but if he did, whoever it was that was speaking to him was going to hear it. And just as a gut feeling, he thought that the man on the other end of the line might react poorly to that, and he couldn't hang up, because then Macy Stockwell would die. Walter's brain felt like it was disconnected electrical lines just throwing sparks. The voice again. "Do you understand, Walter? It's not Pete. He knows my name. He's threatening to kill Macy. Who the fuck is he?" "How do I know you really have Macy?" Walter asked woodenly. Over the line, the calm voice spoke. "I'll tell you what. How about you accept the live feed? That way we can talk face to face. I think this would go a lot better if we were face to face. That way you can look into my eyes and know that I'm serious, and you can see the pistol that I have pointing at Macy's head right now." Walter tried to think, tried to outmaneuver, but he was knocked on his heels right now. He was trying to think of a million different paths that this might take, a million different ramifications, but he couldn't hold all the possibilities in his head at the same time, not with the dread and the fear coursing through him like hurricane winds. "All right," he said. "Buy time." Walter pulled the PD's monitor up and selected the live feed option. The monitor switched from a menu to a man. Young man. Pretty man. Well-dressed man. Standing in the middle of a living room that Walter knew quite well. 24 hours ago, he'd been sleeping on that green couch with a fox hunt scene. There, right next to the couch. Was that Pete? Was he laying down? No, of course he wasn't laying down. He was dead. Walter saw the blood. All of this in the background, Walter trying to soak it in quickly, taking it in like you would take in the details of a picture that you were told you had to memorize and recreate. It was the only thing he could think to do. But in the foreground, the man. One arm held out to support the PD from which he was transmitting to Walter. The other arm extended down, and in its hand there was a pistol, just as he'd said there was. And at the business end of that pistol, just as he'd said, there was Macy Stockwell, on her knees, eyes red, nose red, trying hard to look defiant and failing miserably. "What is my task? Talk to this guy. Figure a way out." Walter had an ability. He could read people. The live feed would give him that ability better than just a voice. This was good. This would play to his strengths. Maybe he could figure something out. "Who are you?" Walter said, unable to emote through his voice. All his words came out sullen and dead. "I'm Agent Goring," the man said, with the tone of someone introducing themselves at a swanky uptown meeting greet. "Agent in command of the Southeast Region. I gotta say, Walter, it feels kind of good to finally be speaking to you face to face." Walter stared at him, stared at his eyes. "You trying to track me? Is that why you want me to stay on the line?" The man smiled, and there was no subterfuge in it. "No, Walter. No, I'm not tracking you. Do you know why?" "Why?" "Because you're going to come to me." "No, I'm not." And in Walter's mind, he thought, if I refuse to go to him, is he going to kill Macy? Do I even care if he kills Macy? Walter wasn't sure if he did. The agent named Goring smiled like a long-suffering teacher and appeared to manipulate something on the PD that he held. "Well, Walter, I just sent you something. You might want to look at it." Walter shook his head. "I'm not going to look at it." Even as he said it, he saw the icon pop up on the upper corner of the monitor. A new file. A video file. And it was labeled. Walter's eyes went over it. Went over it again, and then again. "Roy," was all it said. The smile on the agent's face had fallen away. "Oh, I think you're going to look at it." Walter couldn't help himself. He reached his finger up and touched it, and the file opened, and it played. Roy. It was Roy. Walter felt the wind come out of his lungs. They had Roy. He was in a hole in the ground. He was screaming. Walter closed the file and looked back at the live feed, and the agent's face looking back at him was like death coming for him, inexorable and unstoppable.
I have your brother, Agent Goring said with quiet self-assurance. If you're curious how I got him, you can ask your wife. She can probably clue you in on some of the finer details.
Walter's mind raged. He had no idea what Agent Goring meant by that, about asking Carolyn, but Walter's mind seized on one thing and one thing only.
Carolyn. Talk to Carolyn.
The comm key was still on Walter's finger, his left finger, and the PD was on his left arm. It was physically impossible for Goring to see Walter's left hand. So Walter touched the comm key off. He kept it pressed down, and he wasn't going to let it go because he wasn't trying to initiate a two-way conversation. He was trying to let Carolyn hear what was happening. That was all he could hope for right now. With the comm line open and praying to God that Carolyn hadn't switched it off, Walter nodded to the man on the live feed.
Okay. You have Roy, Agent Goring. What do you want from me?
Chapter 31. Carolyn had turned off her comms. She stood in the command area, still looking up at the map of the OLC and listening to Hughes go on excitedly about all the hubbub he was detecting over the networks and transmissions that he'd been able to hack, with the help of Carolyn's tech team, of course. Getty and Bobby were in the room with them, and Carolyn liked them being there. There was something about them that made her feel closer to Walter. They were his friends, and she wanted them to be her friends, or at least to be around them and be friendly with them, and in so doing, she felt like she was catching a glimpse of him somehow. These people, they trusted him. They'd followed him. They'd gone into battle with him. It was odd, like seeing Walter for the first time, a different person than she'd ever known. And she'd been happy with the original version, but she'd found that her respect for him had grown. When Hughes took a break from his excited reporting to take a look at a piece of new information, Carolyn took the opportunity to turn to Getty and Bobby.
If they do move on Durham and the resistance assaults Coax County, are you planning on being there?
Getty and Bobby exchanged a glance. Something was communicated between the two, and it made Carolyn feel a bit left out, so she wished for Walter even more. Getty nodded.
I guess we'll have to see how things shake out after today.
He rubbed his chin thoughtfully, cast another glance at Bobby.
It would be kinda nice to kick their asses. Good God, when's the last time we had a real hard victory?
Too long,
Carolyn acknowledged. And it was at that moment that Bobby twitched, and her delicate eyebrows came together in a slight frown. One of her hands drifted up to her ear as though she wasn't thinking about it. Carolyn lifted her chin to the woman.
You leave the comms on? What, is Walter trying to...
Shh, Bobby hissed, then held up a finger. Carolyn had been about to crack a joke about Walter asking for directions back, but suddenly Bobby's look made Carolyn feel like her face was losing all its blood and her stomach felt heavy, like a sack of wet sand, swinging around in the hollow of her midsection.
Walt's got an open mic, Bobby said.
Then she started snapping her fingers.
Turn your comms back on. Turn them back on. Something's wrong.
Carolyn jumped and flicked her own comms back on, and when the channel opened up and reached her ear, she heard a man's voice that she didn't recognize, and it was calmly speaking mid-sentence. Your friend's with you? What about Chief Kozlowski? Is that giant, traitorous bastard with you right now? Carolyn watched the rest of the world start to melt, or disappear. It went somewhere. Carolyn wasn't sure where it went, but she could only see what was directly in front of her, like looking through a cardboard tube. The rest of her vision had been turned to darkling blackness. She hadn't felt this way since I killed John. She remembered to breathe, in and out. Walter's voice now. No, I'm alone.
Good, the calm stranger's voice said. But you know I can't just trust you. Pan the feet around so I can see. Give me a nice big 360-degree turn so I can make sure your friends aren't there with you.
There was silence on the line. Carolyn imagined that Walter was probably complying, and she was quick enough and smart enough to realize what was happening. Walter was speaking to someone on his PD, and they were on a live feed, which would also explain why Walter's and the stranger's voices were coming through the comm so clearly. Whoever the stranger was, he was in control, and he had something that was making Walter submit.
Shit, what if he's staring at us right now through a gunship sights? Carolyn wondered.
What if Walter's complying because otherwise there's going to be a ton of ordnance dropped on our heads? Should we be evacuating right now? Carolyn looked up and blinked to clear her faltering vision, realized she was holding her breath, and she let it out and turned her head and saw Hughes looking at them with a note of curious concern.
Hughes, she said to him, get Carmichael, now.
She looked at Bobby.
Did you hear anything about us? The first part that you heard that I didn't. Was there anything about us?
Bobby shook her head, tight-lipped.
There, Walter's voice spoke. It had that tone and quality to it that was resentful forbearance. His arm was being twisted. Carolyn could tell just by the way he spoke. I'm alone. No one is here but me.
Carolyn looked at Getty. She felt the urge to speak quietly, as though Walter and the stranger might hear her, even though that was not possible with Walter holding down the transmit button.
Get Kaz. I need him listening to this.
Getty nodded and turned away.
Good, the stranger said, his voice more processed-sounding than Walter's.
Here's what you're going to do, Walter. You're going to get on that janky-ass van of yours, and you're going to drive to a police station, where you're going to take credit for this morning's attack at the OLC and turn yourself in. You're going to remain on the line with me, or Macy Stockwell is going to get a bullet to the brain. And you're going to turn yourself in, or your brother is going to get a bullet to the brain. Do you understand?
Yes, Walter said, his voice like dry, seasoned hickory. I understand.
He spoke slowly, but his mind raced, ran mad. It rifled through the contents of his brain for a good idea, like a desperate burglar turning over every inch of a poor man's house looking for something valuable. Even as words exited his mouth, his brain screamed, Think! Think! He walked slowly to the driver's side door of the van. He'd already closed the passenger side door because he didn't want Agent Goring to see the thermal explosive that sat in the front seat. He didn't know if it even mattered, but right now, in a position with very little options, every option counted. Every choice was precious. And who knew? Maybe, in the end, the best choice would be to melt himself down with the van.
Fuck, fuck, fuck. You've got to come up with a better idea than that.
You're walking very slowly, Walter, Agent Goring said with an exasperated exhale. Let's put some pep in your step, huh? If you're not at the police station in, let's say, 30 minutes, I'm going to kill everyone you care about. Does that motivate you, Walter?
Walter opened the driver's side door and climbed in quickly.
Okay. His eyes coursed over the van in a panic, but his words were steady. Tell me where I'm going. What police station you want me to go to?
Durham West Metro, Goring snapped.
All right, Walter said, looking around for the keys.
Keys.
Keys. His eyes alighted on the dashboard, the keys sitting in the rickety cup holder just below it. The dashboard, and right there, affixed to one of the air vents, was the little coin-sized tracking device that Carolyn had installed.
All right, Walter repeated.
Keys, keys. He fumbled them out of the cup holder. They dropped to the floor with an audible clatter.
Fuck, he muttered, and bent to fish them off the floor.
What's he doing?
Carolyn whispered, looking at Bobby. Bobby squinted, intensely focused.
Sounds like he's stalling. He's doing something.
Carolyn nodded rapidly. Her eyes kept going back to the map display still hanging in the air above her. It still showed Durham. It showed the units that she had deployed around the city, doing the normal, disruptive things that she had instructed them to do in order to keep the COAX thinking that everything in Durham was business as usual. Was there a unit that she could use right now? What was Walter doing right now? And was there a way that she could help him? She raked fingers through her hair and held it, pulled tight against her skull. She swore under her breath, and her heart would not give it a fucking rest already. It was starting to fatigue her. She felt like there was something she was missing. Walter was trying to communicate to them, but there was something she was missing.
Get the keys, Walter, the stranger said, a man whom Walter had called Agent Goring.
You're making me uncomfortable, and when I get uncomfortable, people start dying.
I got him, Walter said. I'm putting him in the ignition now.
Turn the camera so I can see your face.
Silence. Then the sound of an engine turning over.
The van. He was in the van. He was going to the Durham West Metro Police Station, a beleaguered gaggle of confused officers with even more confused loyalties that lay on the line between the yellow zone and the green zone. The resistance owned two officers, but they were low level, only really good for information. They couldn't get much done. For a skinny second, Carolyn considered moving some of her elements to intercept Walter, but that wouldn't do much good, would it? That would only cause Agent Goring to pull the trigger on Macy Stockwell, who Carolyn didn't care that much about compared to her husband, and eventually on Roy, who Carolyn cared slightly more for, but still not as much as her husband. However, it was obvious that Walter cared. Otherwise, he wouldn't be complying in order to save their lives. Carolyn wanted to use force to pull him out of that situation, but that felt like a bad answer that didn't quite fit. There was a better answer, if she could just get her brain to start working in the goddamn gear that she needed it in.
Okay, Walter said. I'm driving.
Good. Just keep driving to the police station and stay on the line with me, Walter. And keep your face in the frame.
In the background, Carolyn could hear the faint rumble of tires over uneven terrain. He was still at the backwoods place where they'd stationed his getaway car. The getaway car would still be there then. It was the van that was driving out. The van. The van.
Shit!
Carolyn reached up to the map projection and put her fingers into the glowing image and swiped it to her right so that the map image shifted to the west of Durham. She did it again, and then she saw what she was looking for. She jabbed a finger at the little blue waypoint.
It's the tracker. For the van. How does that do us any good?
Bobby asked.
We already know he's heading for Durham West Metro.
Carolyn grimaced and couldn't help her hands from clutching the sides of her face.
I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out.
The sound of footsteps behind her. Kaz appeared, trailing Gibbs and Getty.
What's wrong? What happened? He demanded.
Bobby turned to him and spat it out.
Walter's on the line with a Fed agent. The agent is holding Macy hostage and forcing Walter to turn himself in at a police station.
Kaz blinked a few times.
What?
The word came out of him like a whip crack. No one answered.
It's cool, Gibbs said, putting a hand on his comrade's shoulder. We're gonna figure it out. Macy'll be okay.
Gibbs turned to Carolyn.
How do we know all this?
Walter keyed his comms,
Carolyn explained, the words tumbling out of her.
We're listening to him and the agent talk on the open line.
Can you guys put that on a speaker for everyone to hear, so we don't have to repeat shit?
Carolyn let out a hiss.
Yeah,
she mumbled, looking around for the little control module that would switch the transmission to open audio. She should have thought of that already. She found the module on the cluttered table to her left and switched the audio feed. The sound stopped tickling her eardrums and started resonating around the room. She pulled the comm piece from her ear.
He's just driving right now.
Where?
Durham West Metro Police Station.
Any way to get a team there?
Carolyn shook her head.
No. Well, there is, but I think that's a bad option.
Gibbs tilted his head.
If they get their hooks in Walter, our chances of getting him out of there sink hugely.
I know,
Carolyn said, louder than she intended.
Where's the agent holding Macy?
Kaz demanded, his voice cold and stiff.
We don't know. We've only heard the agent threaten to kill her, as well as Walter's brother Roy, and it seems like Walt believes him.
Shit, they have Roy too?
Carolyn blinked and chose not to look at Kaz to answer that question.
Yes, the agent says he has Roy.
Gibbs pointed to the little blue arrow on the map.
That waypoint just moved. Is that Walt? Is that the van?
Yes.
We gotta pull him out, Gibbs repeated. We can't let him go through with this. He's making an emotional decision right now, and it's gonna hurt us strategically.
Carolyn didn't answer. She knew he was right. She also knew that Walter was right. She wanted Walter to be safe, though, and she wanted to give in to what Gibbs was saying. All it would take would be a simple order, and then they could stop Walter from going away. She was on the cusp of making that decision when Walter spoke again.
You need to give me more time, he said.
I believe 30 minutes is plenty.
I'll have to drive around the red zone, Walter said,
and something in his voice struck Carolyn as off. Something so slight, only someone that knew him very well would have caught it. He was saying something important and disguising it as unimportant.
If I drive through, my people might recognize the van. I don't want them jumping the gun and trying to get involved.
Carolyn looked across at Bobby, then at Getty. The three of them were locked in together. The three people that knew Walter best. And they all knew that Walter was speaking directly to them. Agent Goring grunted.
Well, if they do get involved, it'll be unfortunate for them.
However, regardless of what route you take to get to the police station, I still feel that 30 minutes is ample time. A slight sigh. If I were to give you any more time, you might try to do something untoward. In any case, getting there on time is your problem, not mine.
I'll have to drive straight through, Walter said, his words very deliberate. Hopefully my people don't jump the gun.
Carolyn pointed at nothing in particular.
There. He said it again.
Bobby and Getty both nodded, frowned.
What? Kaz demanded. What did he say?
He's telling us not to do anything,
Carolyn answered.
Of course he's saying that, Gibbs interjected. He's not thinking straight.
No.
Carolyn whirled on the new breed that hulked behind her. Gibbs and Kaz stood abreast of each other. Kaz looked disturbed. Gibbs seemed calm but irritated.
Didn't you hear him say jump the gun? He said, I hope they don't jump the gun. He said it fucking twice. He's telling us to be patient.
Be patient? Gibbs gawked. Is that what you're getting out of that?
She's right,
Bobby put in, and Getty nodded along with her.
She knows, Walt. So do we. He was talking straight to us just now, and he's telling us to wait.
What the fuck does he want us to wait for? Gibbs demanded. Carolyn felt suddenly lost.
I don't know.
Kaz looked back and forth between Carolyn and Gibbs, his eyes flashing fierce. Finally, he settled on Carolyn.
Are you sure?
Am I sure about what?
That he's asking us to wait for something.
Carolyn stared up at the monolith of a man that towered over her. She felt suddenly childlike, confused, and uncertain.
Yes,
she said, with resolution that she didn't feel. And then immediately her mind started reeling, thinking, what if he's not? What if he's saying the opposite? What if he's asking for us to help him? She glanced over to Bobby again, and Getty. Both of them nodded. Yes, they knew Walter, but it was easier for them to be detached, because Walter was not their family, and it was their detachment from the issue that sealed it. Carolyn nodded back at them.
Yes, I'm positive. He wants us to wait for something.
She turned back to the map.
But I have no clue what it is.
Chapter 32. Walter drove with both hands on the wheel, his back rigid. His left thumb still holding down that button. He watched the road, but out of the corner of his eye, he saw the projection of Agent Goring, still holding a gun to Macy's head. Macy had calmed some. The constancy of her circumstance had dulled her fear.
I'm going, Walter said. You have Roy. You have control. I'm going where you want me to go. You don't need Macy. You can let her go.
Oh, I can let her go? Goring said, his voice mocking. Please, Walter, don't tell me how to do my job. I'm the one that's winning right now, and you're losing pretty badly. It'd be stupid for me to take the advice of a loser.
No, I think I'll hang on to Macy for a little while longer.
Walter saw the skyline of Durham growing in front of him. He glanced at the monitor. He needed to communicate to Carolyn, tell her and whoever else was listening, hopefully the entire team, that Goring held Macy at the safe house. Walter wasn't sure what they could do, but it was more information that he could give them.
Is that Pete's body in the background? Walter asked.
Agent Goring's eyes narrowed. He tilted his head.
Walter, do you honestly think I don't know what you're doing right now?
Walter's heart squirmed into his throat.
I don't know what you're talking about, he said, and his voice was higher and tighter than he would have liked.
Goring smiled unkindly. What is it, huh? You've got an open comm line with one of your friends? How obvious is that? You're trying to get them to come save you? Trying to tell them where I'm holding Macy?
Walter stared straight forward and felt his hands start to shake. He gripped the steering wheel tighter. His jaw ratcheted down.
Well, Goring said, stretching his neck from side to side, let's just clear the air right now. Hello, whoever is listening. If you want to know where I'm holding Macy right now, that would be at your quote-unquote safe house, which, as it turns out, is not so safe. Yes, Pete is dead. I killed him. He was an ornery old fuck. And yes, you are welcome to mount some sort of rescue operation to try to come get Macy. That would just be the highlight of my day.
Grinding his teeth together. There's nothing you can do right now. There's nothing you can do but wait. Wait and trust and hope and fucking pray that Carolyn realizes what's happening.
You know, Goring went on, as long as we're on the topic of being honest and forthright with each other, which I think is a great way to start this relationship, I'd like to tell you that you won't be the first Walter Baucom that I've captured.
Walter blinked, steeled himself.
I know, he said. You had my pops. You tried to turn him against me.
Walter's nostrils flared and he looked sharply at the image of Goring.
How'd that work out for you?
Goring shrugged. Not bad in the long run. I eventually got what I needed, didn't I? I like to have a lot of pans in the fire, you know? I like to have options. Don't like to put all my eggs in one basket. I keep my portfolio diversified.
Mel killed herself, Walter said. She put a bullet through her brain so that you couldn't use her anymore.
Aw, that's pretty pathetic. Walter's neck burned, then his head.
You fuck.
Do you know what happened to your pops? The agent goaded. Walter concentrated on breathing, trying to steady himself.
I assume you killed him.
Ha! Goring seemed genuinely delighted.
Well, good for you. You're starting to learn.
Goring whistled.
Man, what a tale to be told for the Baucom family. Two generations of your family completely wrecked by one man.
By me. You're going to die, Walter wanted to tell him, but he didn't want to anger him. Not when he was pointing a gun at Macy's head. So Walter didn't let the words pass his lips, and they burned there, sitting on his tongue like drops of acid. Walter was entering the outskirts of the red zone now, driving straight through.
"You have the look of a man," Goring continued, "who still has hope. Why is that?"
Walter just kept his jaw clenched shut, kept staring straight ahead. The playful attitude of Goring faltered, and he lowered his head.
"Answer me, Walter," he said with a low, warning tone. "Use your words."
"What do you want me to say?"
Walter choked the words out.
"You've got me."
Goring relaxed. He sniffed haughtily.
"Time's ticking."
Carolyn's command room had gone to chaos. She no longer had command of it. Kaz and Gibbs thundered at each other like two warring gods.
"We know where she is,"
Kaz yelled, jamming his hand out in a nebulous direction.
"We can take him down."
"You're not thinking straight," Gibbs growled back.
"Why is no one in this room being fucking reasonable? Kaz, I know you care about Macy, but what you're talking about is a fucking suicide run, and you know it. The second we show up, they're gonna drop 6 mini-bombs right on our noses, and we're just gonna be 6 splatters in the woods around that safe house."
He thrust a finger at Kaz. "If you stop for 2 goddamn seconds and think about it, you know that I'm right."
"What about Walter?" Geddy said aloud. "We need to be paying attention to what he's trying to do."
Gibbs whirled around.
"I'll tell you what he's trying to do. He's trying to keep Macy Stockwell and his brother alive. He's letting Goring use his better nature against his better judgment. And Goring is winning this round because this is a ridiculous decision. Do you honestly believe that Goring's not going to kill Macy and Roy both as soon as he gets his hands on Walter? Not to mention, he might just want to kill Walter."
Bobby massaged her forehead.
"Here's the problem. As soon as Walter is taken out of that van, we're not going to have any idea where he's at. That tracker is going to stop moving, and they're going to strip those comms off of Walter, and we're going to be deaf and blind."
Carolyn scanned the faces around her.
"Where are they going to take him?"
"To a black site," Gibbs said. "Probably the same damn one that Roy is sitting in right now, if Roy is even still alive. And guess what? We have no fucking idea where that black site is. Goring knows this. That's why he doesn't give a shit that Walter's transmitting to us. Because as soon as Walter turns himself in, as Bobby has so aptly pointed out, we're gonna be blind and deaf. We're gonna have no way of knowing where they took Walter. He's essentially just gonna, poof, disappear off the face of the earth, and you're never gonna see him again."
Involuntarily, Carolyn touched her stomach. She felt like someone was pushing a knife into it.
"He's asking us to wait,"
she said again, more like she was convincing herself at that moment than trying to convince anyone else. She did need to convince herself, because right now, Gibbs was making a lot of damn sense. His logic was impeccable. Once Walter got to that police station, they were going to have no way of knowing where the hell Walter was and where Goring was taking him.
"Even if we did know where the black site was," Gibbs continued, calmer now that everyone wasn't yelling, "we wouldn't be able to take it. They're small and they're lightly staffed, but they are staffed. And they're staffed by new breeds, fully equipped, fully dug in, fully fortified. The 6 of us, even if you guys helped out and made it a whopping 9 or 10, would just be meat and a grinder."
"That's not true," Kaz said, in a distracted sort of way. "There's a way to neutralize those new breeds." Gibbs grimaced.
"If you're talking about the echo devices, and I'd love to know how the hell you plan to get any. It's not like we can go requisition them from Colonel Wainwright and the Udies, seeing as how we've kinda gone rogue."
Carolyn felt suddenly lightheaded.
"Wait, we can..."
She cut herself off and looked at Gibbs and then Kaz.
"Just answer me this one question, okay?"
They stared, expectant. Carolyn's pulse thundered in her ears.
"Can you find out where the black site is?"
Gibbs and Kaz exchanged a glance. But it was Kaz who spoke, and he did it with a ponderous shake of his head.
"No, Carolyn. We don't know where this black site is."
Carolyn didn't want to let go of this fleeting hope.
"But what about the black site before? The one where they were taking Bobby and Pops? You knew about that?"
"Yeah, we knew about that," Kaz said, then nodded over Carolyn's shoulder. "That was information we got from Brad."
Carolyn spun on Brad Hughes.
"Can you tell us where?"
The compressed line of Hughes's grim lips told Carolyn everything she needed to know.
"I'm sorry, Carolyn. There are dozens of black sites in the area. I have no idea where Goring plans on taking Walt."
He shook his head.
"I'm sorry."
"I'm pulling into the police station,"
Walter said, and his stomach felt sour and ready to rebel against him, and the muscles in his body twitched and jittered.
"Good," Goring replied as though unconcerned. "You're going to keep me on the line, Walter. You're going to keep me on the line until I've heard you and watched you turn yourself into the front desk. You're going to walk right up and you're going to say, I'm Walter Balkan III. I am the fifth name on the domestic terrorist watch list. I just attacked the OLC and I'd like to turn myself in. Can you remember all that? Walter nodded. Words, motherfucker, Goring hissed at him. Yes, Walter said, and his mouth sweated like he might vomit. He was walking a tightrope, and it was a long damn fall that stretched out underneath him. Roy had always alluded to DTI, but never talked about it in detail. What he'd subtly hinted at was enough for Walter. It was hell on earth. It was an unending sentence that you never came back from, and it was marked by torture and abuse. And Walter was walking into it. Walter pulled into the parking lot in front of the main entrance to the police station. A few patrol vehicles were parked to the side. An officer in soft armor and a subgun strapped to his chest walked by, and he looked sidelong at Walter's van but took no action. The officer walked into the front entrance, unhurried, unworried. Yes, the description of the van had been disseminated, but then it was just an average-looking van, and no one really expected a wanted man to park at the front of the police station. I'm parking now. Walter put the van into park and stopped the engine. He swallowed against thickness in his throat and then pushed the door open. Agent Goring, I'm getting out and walking into the police station. You got me. You can let Macy go. Bright morning sun hit him as he stepped out and let the door close behind him. It was warm, but it was harsh. It had none of the soft caress of other morning sunlight that Walter had experienced. It felt like sandpaper on his skin. Not yet, Walter, Goring sighed. You need to be taken into custody. I want to hear those restraints tighten on your wrists. He smelled only the hot engine of the van, ticking as it cooled. The front flagpole, and atop it the flag of the United States sat dully wilted, and underneath it the flag of the coalition. This is happening, Walter told himself. This is happening and you can't turn away. Go through with it. Go through with it. You have to nut up, you knocker. Walter walked, awkward and stiff as a drunken man trying to look sober, towards the front doors. His left arm still held up with the elbow crooked, like he was escorting a beautiful woman, but there was nothing on his arm but a PD and a projection of Agent Goring holding a gun to the head of Macy Stockwell. His thumb was starting to ache from holding down the transmit button of the comms. He still had an open line with him, and he was going to maintain that for as long as he could. It was his one ethereal connection to something less terrifying than the present. Walter glanced from side to side, and he couldn't help a cowardly feeling filling him up, burning in his bones. He wanted a place to run to. He still had time. He could just run right now, and maybe they'd catch him, and maybe they wouldn't, but at least he wouldn't be walking straight into their hands. This is what you have to do, and we do what we have to. He found himself at the front doors, and they slid open like they were waiting for him, and it seemed like he had stage fright, and those were the curtains opening up, and the guards and the officers inside were the audience, and their faces turned to him, and it was too goddamn late to back out now. If he ran, they would chase him. The entryway, the vestibule, the front desk, and behind it, two officers in plain uniforms, probably with sidearms, but Walter could not tell, because they sat down behind their bullet-resistance desks, and their eyes came up and squinted at him with evident suspicion. And to the left, the two scanners to make sure that you weren't carrying weapons or explosives into the police station, and the two guards there, these ones fully equipped in soft armor and subguns, and they watched him too, and one of them stepped forward and lifted his chin. Can I help you, sir? The officer asked, his hand resting just a few inches away from the grip of his subgun. Walter stared at him, and he believed he was sweating. The sunlight was gone from him, but he didn't feel any better. The interior of the police station felt ice cold. Say the words, Goring's voice prodded at him. The guarding officers, both of them now, gripped their subguns and bladed their bodies, letting their suspicious gut feelings guide them now. Carolyn, Walter said, and he tried to keep his voice as steady as he possibly could. Remember to have patience. I love you so much. Walter? A warning tone from Goring. And then Walter held up his hands, and he looked at the guarding officer that was closest to him, the officer all but raising the muzzle of the subgun at this point. I'm Walter Balkan III, Walter said with a dead voice. I'm the fifth name on the domestic terrorist watch list. I've just attacked the OLC. I want to turn myself in. Goring smiled, almost beatific in his triumph. Was there a better feeling in the world? He did not think that there was. To outwit, to outmatch, or even to simply muscle your way into victory. Any of them would do. It was just the fact that he won. Nothing else mattered. He was still live with Walter, and he heard over the feed the sounds of police officers giving out loud commands.
They told him to get down on his knees, and then another one was telling Walter to take off his PD.
"Hey, Walter," Goring called out, and he could just see the side of Walter's head as the dumb fuck's scared cow eyes glanced in the direction of Goring's live feed. "You think Chief Kozlowski is listening to this? If so, this is for both of you."
Then he fired his pistol, but he kept his eyes locked on Walter's so that he could watch his reaction as the bullet passed through Macy Stockwell's head, puffing her hair out on the opposite side of her pretty little skull, like some kid in class had been tugging at it, and the light left her eyes, and her terrified face went slack, and she toppled sideways. On the live feed, Walter's eyes had stretched wide enough to see the white all around his iris, and the poor, stupid grower boy was filled with so much impotent rage that Goring knew he'd already been broken, and he would be easy to crack open, and he just smiled back at the man.
"You motherfuck!"
Walter started to scream, but anything else was cut off. The live feed ended. One of the officers must have disconnected it. Goring used the muzzle of his pistol, still warm, to close his own PD, and he holstered the pistol. He turned to Agent Barnes. The younger man stood, looking down at Macy Stockwell with a blank expression. When he realized he was being looked at, he snapped up, almost to attention.
"Yes?"
Barnes asked, almost reflexively. Goring sniffed.
"Get us a gunship and a new breed escort. We're heading to Durham West Metro."
Carolyn's command room was silence. For just a moment. Then Kaz thrust a paw out at the screen.
"Was that?"
"Yes," Gibbs said.
"Did he really?"
And this time no one answered. Kaz's hand dropped to his side and he just stared at the projection for a moment. He had nothing to say, or at least he was not willing to say whatever he had, and neither was anyone else. Carolyn watched him and she tried to think of words of comfort, but she had none to give right now. Her heart hammered and she barely kept her own self together. She could not save another when she was drowning herself. Eventually, in the silence, Kaz simply nodded.
"Okay," he said.
And then he looked at Carolyn, and his eyes were dead cold, somehow ice and fire at once, and she thought that his eyes looked much like her eyes, looked much like the eyes of everyone in that room at that moment. The eyes of people intent on killing. Not in a rage, not in a lashing out and baring of teeth, but in a planned and controlled way. In a deliberate, cold-blooded way. And Kaz nodded his head at Carolyn, and she nodded back, because they understood now. Chapter 33. They took him down to the ground. They laid him flat, and they stripped the PD from his arm, and the last image that he saw on the monitor was Goring's face smiling calmly at him, and in the background, Macy's body slumped over on the floor in a similar attitude as the body of Pete. Goring. Walter's head was full of static and drums and clashing cymbals. They pulled his hands behind his back and they placed restraints on him. They were cold, and they ratcheted them tight, and then they kicked his feet apart, and one of the officers started to pat him down, while the other held a subgun to Walter's head and told him very earnestly that he was going to blow his brains out if he did anything weird. Walter said nothing back. He turned away and faced the floor, putting his forehead on the tiling, and it felt as cold as the restraints had felt. And it smelled of dirt and the ghost of lemon-scented polish. Walter could see a hair on the ground that was not his, and it stirred in the wind of his breath but didn't blow away. They found his comms, and they stripped those from him.
"Who were you talking to?"
one of the officers asked him. He couldn't tell which, but he didn't bother responding. The officers were not the Fed. They were still held to certain standards. They could not do the things that Goring could do, and so Walter decided to ignore them. A new voice called up, maybe one of the officers from the front desk.
"Is that Walter Lawrence Baucom III?
Walter tilted his head and looked. It was not one of the officers at the front desk, but it was a newcomer, this one wearing brass on his collars and a shock of gray hair, and he stood behind the two officers at the desk with a mystified but focused look on his face.
"That's who he says he is."
"Well, have you confirmed?"
"Sir, he just came in. We just got done searching him."
The gray-haired man with the brass on his collars looked down and appeared to be listening, and Walter realized that he was on the line with someone, and Walter had a solid idea of who he was on the line with.
"Yes, I understand," the brass said, "but you'll need to confirm all of that when you get here. Until then, we'll hold him in the room."
"Okay." The man blinked a few times, then disconnected his PD. Then he looked up at the two officers. "Get him to one of the interview rooms and shackle him up. Don't let him out of your sight. I want four officers guarding him, and I want you to pull units back here now and hold security until we can get this guy out of here."
Then the man looked at Walter.
Apparently, there's a concern that some of his friends might try to rescue him. That true?
One of the officers nudged Walter's shoulder with the toe of a boot.
No,
Walter replied, and he was being honest, though he knew they wouldn't believe him.
We got it, Cap, the other officer said.
Then they hauled him up to his feet.
You got anything else on you?
Walter felt weak, like he wasn't quite able to support his own weight.
No.
You tell me about it now and we won't charge you with it, okay?
Walter turned to look at the officer. He was a big guy, but he had this moon-round baby face and freckles across his nose. These straightforward eyes just staring at Walter like this was a normal bust, just an average thug to be jailed. Did they not know what the fuck they were dealing with? Walter actually laughed, but he stifled it quickly.
You charge me with whatever you want, you knocker. They're putting me away for the rest of my life, if they don't just put a bullet in me.
The baby-faced officer traded a glance with his partner, and for the barest of seconds, Walter thought he saw something flicker in those eyes, something like commiseration, like he wanted to be on Walt's side, but just couldn't bring himself to.
That's okay,
Walter said, the black humor fleeing him now.
I didn't fight back either. Not until they came after my family. Maybe you'll never experience that. Then again, maybe you will.
The other officer gave Walter a small shove.
All right, shut up, please.
The baby-faced officer seemed to recover himself and nodded.
Come on, sir. Come with me.
And they escorted him away, to a room. They sat him in a chair, and they shackled his legs to the floor, and they stood in the room with him, watching him in silence, while other officers arrived to watch the hall outside, and to watch the front entrance, and to fortify the police station. Time did funny things to Walter. It sped up and slowed down, like an inexperienced driver uncertain of what to do with the pedals. The two in the room did not speak to him. Sometimes one of them would step out and Walter would hear murmured talking on the other side. When the door to the room opened, Walter could see that there were several other officers outside, and all of them were heavily armed and armored, wearing helmets and battle shrouds.
They're not coming here, Walter thought. They're not coming to get me. No one is coming.
The reality of that kept staggering closer to him and then retreating again, sickening him and then making his head feel light and fuzzy. Hard nerves, like veins of ore running through his bones. His tongue kept sticking to the roof of his mouth. He was going to be in Goring's hands. That was just the way it was going to be. He closed his eyes and he pictured Carolyn, and he wondered if she'd understood anything he'd said. He'd gone all in. He'd put everything he had into Carolyn. But now he felt like she was slipping away, receding on a rip current of cold, hard truth that didn't give a fuck in the world about any of Walter's forlorn hopes.
That was life, wasn't it?
You can plan until your ears bleed, but you can't control reality. Somewhere above the Durham West Metro Police Station, Walter could hear the thrumming rotors of an approaching gunship.
He's here.
The gunship swayed in a gust of wind as it started lowering itself quickly to the rooftop pad on the Durham West Metro Station. Goring watched the ground approach. He felt satisfied. Happy, even. Of course, there was always a bit of nerves, wasn't there? Because he did not yet have Walter locked in a cage. Walter was being held by police officers of dubious loyalty to the Fed and the COAX, and even after Goring had his team of new breeds take custody of Walter, they would still have to transport him to Black Site Evergreen. And during that time, he would be exposed. The chances of the rebels actually being able to do anything was slim, but it was there. And the thing they had the best chance of doing was simply shooting the gunship out of the sky with a rocket. Yes, that would kill Walter, but Goring didn't put it past them if it meant keeping their secrets buried. After all, the Udies had sold Roy Balcom out. Goring turned to Barnes. You wait here. Barnes nodded once. He sat on the bench seat with his back to the cockpit. The rest of the bench seats were filled with the hulks of six new breeds. Goring turned his attention to their senior chief.
Chief Franti, leave two behind to secure the rooftop and neighboring buildings, please. If anyone sees anything that even looks like a gun, you take that person out. Don't take any chances.
Chief Franti nodded once and then rose from his seat and his new breeds rose with him. The one nearest the door pulled it open and the wind and noise and dust came roaring into the cabin as the gunship descended the last few feet and then rocked to a stop. The hustle of boots just barely audible over the rotors. Goring followed them out, squinting against the wind. Two of the six new breeds peeled off in different directions. Both were armed with long-range rifles, and they posted up quickly on opposite corners of the building and immediately began to scan across rooftops and in alleyways. Chief Franti and his remaining three new breeds made their way to a roof access, and Goring followed at a quick, business-like clip. His hands touched the top button of his suit jacket,
and he almost buttoned it out of habit, but he wanted to have free access to his holstered pistol if he needed it. Sure, he was surrounded by new breeds, but again, Agent Goring wasn't taking any chances. The captain of the station met them at the top of the stairs and opened the door for them. He was accompanied by two officers, and Goring looked them over briefly, wondering why the hell they were even there. Goring met the captain's eyes, then spied his name tag and confirmed that it was indeed the Captain Hull that he'd spoken to earlier. Goring held out his credentials in a flippant manner, and he didn't know if Captain Hull even had time to read them, nor did he care. "Agent Goring," he announced loudly over the gunship behind him. "Agent in command for this region. I expect all the clearances went through just fine." Captain Hull nodded and seemed eager to help. That was good. "You can take me to him," Goring prompted. The captain led them down a short staircase and then to an elevator. The elevator was a bit crammed for all of them, the four new breeds present taking up the majority of the space, but they fit. It descended a single floor and they emptied out into a hallway. Goring looked to his right and saw four police officers in full tactical gear, weapons in hand, and he had to assume that the door they guarded contained none other than Walter Baucom. Goring stalked toward the door, now in the lead of the little group. Captain Hull hustled along to keep up with him, but was muscled wordlessly out of the way by Chief Franti. "Walter Baucom inside?" Goring said to the officer standing closest to the door. It was Captain Hull who answered. "Yes, sir. He's in there." "Open, please." The officer opened the door. Goring stood there, looking in, feeling the glow. "Hello," he said to the figure at the table. The figure straightened and looked at Goring, faced him, and for the very first time, Goring was face to face with the man that he'd been chasing. The man at the table looked sad. Goring almost laughed at him, but his nerves wouldn't let him. He was smart enough not to gloat until he had the man under lock and key and away from these local cops, any of who could harbor resistance sympathies and try to turn on them at any moment. "That's him," Goring said, trying to speak flatly and deny the elation that he felt surging through his chest. "Chief Franti, please take possession of Mr. Baucom." The new breeds entered and secured the room. Chief Franti eyed the shackles and instructed one of the officers to undo them. The officer, a baby-faced kid that looked so totally outsized and outmatched amongst those giant statures, hesitated long enough to gain Goring's attention. "He doesn't want to." Goring watched the officer intently, and it did not escape him that the officer's eyes did not go to his, nor to Chief Franti's, but to Walter Baucom's, and they held there for a brief but definable moment, maybe a second, two at the most. But then he stepped forward and produced a manual key. He stooped in front of Walter and unlatched the shackles without looking at him again. Then he straightened with a breath that sounded a bit like pent-up frustration, and his eyes glanced over Goring's, and the corners of his nose twitched to let Goring know that he felt disgusted, either with himself or Goring, or maybe both. Goring simply smiled back, but professionally. "Thank you, officer." Chief Franti took control of one side of Walter Baucom, and one of his teammates took the other side. They didn't haul him roughly out of the seat, but they weren't gentle either. With his arms behind his back, the officer's restraints were removed and replaced with plastic ones, and like the garnish on a particularly delicious meal, they put a black sack over his head. Goring felt his core tighten with an immense satisfaction. He'd wanted to see that for a very long time. "All right," he said, a bit more pep in his step now. "Let's get the fuck out of here." And the exchange was just that quick. The new breeds hauled him back down the hall towards the elevator, and Captain Hull followed along, shoving his PD monitor in Goring's face to obtain his official sign-off. Goring irritably snapped his own PD open and provided the necessary digital sign-off, and then Captain Hull left him alone. "Good luck with him," Captain Hull said lamely. Goring didn't respond. He had what he needed from the man. There was no longer a need for civilities. The elevator rose, then emptied them into the stairwell, and they climbed, and Goring watched Walter's feet stumble numbly up the stairs, and he watched his hands turning a mottled red behind his back as the restraints cut off his blood flow. And that was good. That was perfect. Every little bit would help in the process of breaking Walter. "Don't count your dollars before payday," Goring advised himself. "You still have to get him to the Evergreen. There's still a lot of open air to cross and a lot of dangerous people between here and there." He thought this, but by the time they rose into the air with Walter Baucom lying face down on the deck of the gunship, Goring was smiling. "I don't know what to do." Carolyn stood at the table, her arms locked out, supporting her body as she leaned on it, her head hanging down and staring at the items on the table without really seeing them. What were they, even? A bunch of nonsense.
a bunch of equipment to fight a fight she never wanted to be a part of. Neither did Walter. Both of them just wanted to be left alone. Why was that too much to ask? But all of that was slipping away.